Eagles Entertainment.
With the 10th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast. I'm your host, Fran Duffy, and our position preview series continues. And we've got a doozy here today because we've got Dane Brugler here for Draft Buzz, where he and I, we're going to go through the wide receiver position and the tight end position here on this podcast. We're going to talk through all the top pass catchers, wide receiver, tight end, a lot of players to hit on. So we're going to do that here right at the top of the show in Draft Buzz. After that, we've got a question from you at home. We'll handle a handful of players there on the back end of the episode. And again, the best way to get us, if you want to get into that draft mailbag segment, all you got to do, head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show, leave us a rating, leave us a comment. And if we read your comment, we'll answer it here on an upcoming episode. It could be a question about a specific player. Could be a question about this class. Could be a mock draft. It could be rankings you want us to break up. Whatever it is, leave it there in the comment box. We'll answer it here on an upcoming episode. That said, I said it. We got a lot of players to hit on. It's time now for Draft Buzz with Dane Brugler.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, let's jump into this now as I welcome in Dane Brugler for some Draft Buzz. And Dane, we've got wide receivers and tight ends, a couple of big positions here in this NFL draft. And looking at the wide receivers first, over the last decade, the average number of wide receivers drafted every spring, 31.7. That's the second highest number of all positions. It's right there with cornerback. And actually a little bit of a down year last year, just 28 selected in that draft. The year before it was 34. The year before that was 36 back in that COVID year of 2020. So as we sit here in the first Journey to the Draft podcast in the month of April, it is draft month, a couple weeks away now, over under 31.7. Are there going to be at least 32 wideouts taken in this class?
I think so. I mean, I think you have to say over with just all the teams looking for playmakers at that position. It's a deep, it's not a top heavy group of receivers, but I think it's a pretty deep group. A lot of receivers you can talk yourself into really liking, even and on the day three, like there's some really quality players that, you know, we'll talk about here today. But yeah, I think I have to take the over 32. What are you doing?
I think I'm going to take the over. You know, and it's funny because I feel like every year you would say like, oh yeah, like we're going to take the over on receiver. But it was interesting kind of looking back and saying like, oh, there was only 28 last year, which is,
surprising.
Again, it's well below that number. But, you know, the last year was a heavy tight end year, which we'll get into. This year should be another tight end year. But I do think at wideout, we'll probably hit the over on that when it's all said and done, especially because I don't think offensive line will be as heavy this year, right? So there are some other positions that are usually heavy that I think might be a little light. But that's the nature of this group. Let's get into some of these superlatives now. The best separator, who's just got the best feel for getting open as a route runner in any area of the field and creating his own space to work? You've got an option here, day one or day two.
Yeah, there's a few guys that you could go. Josh Downs, there's a few players that are worthy of this, but have to go Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Ohio State. He's never been a burner, and I think that really made him hone in on just the details of being a route runner, even from an early age. And so it's very natural for him. Every route is crisp, controlled. He's very skilled at controlling his throttle, you know, using different sync or body techniques so he can leverage that coverage. So yeah, if you're looking for a crafty route runner who can create on his own, Smith-Njigba's your guy.
Yeah, for me, you know, I'm going to go to day three for my pick, and I'm going to go with Michael Wilson from Stanford, who I think if you look at his talent, you would say, oh, this is probably a day two kind of guy. But some injuries, the numbers at the position could potentially get him to get into those early stages of day three. And I think when you look at Michael Wilson, one of the things I love about him is that he's got a distinct plan coming off the line of scrimmage on every snap. He really utilizes what I like to call a fast vertical stem. That is a buzzword in the wide receiver community. And really, all you're trying to do there is you're trying to put stress on the corner early. You're trying to press. Hey, every route is going to look like it's a vertical route. And then when you get on that vertical plane, that ability to then, you know, break outside, break inside, do a stop route, or obviously work vertically down the field early in the down, everything looks the same with Michael Wilson. I really appreciate it. The more I watched, the more I was a man, like this guy just really gets it as a route runner. There's a lot of other things that I really like about Michael Wilson's game as well. But I think overall his route running is one of the things that really stands out to me.
No doubt. And his ability to play through contact, he's a bigger guy that helps too, as part of what you're saying, staying on the same plane. So yeah, that plays a part in this as well.
All right, well, let's get to our next category here. I will have the honors of starting this one off. Most natural hands and ball skills. Who's the best ball winner, the best finisher at the catch point in this class? And if I look on day one, day two, there are, again, a couple of names I could have gone with here. But I'm going to go Cedric Tillman from Tennessee. And I think the numbers bear that out. He's got the lowest drop percentage of all these top pass targets in this class, just under 4.5% drop rate over the course of his career, according to PFF. But what stands out most to me about that, Dane, is the fact that if you look at his like average depth of target, it's 14 yards down the field. So this is not a guy that's, oh yeah, it's just a lot of screens and quick game, and that's where he like makes his money. A lot of vertical threats in the vertical routes, rather, in that offense at Tennessee, and he still was on the better end of those reps. So I think when you look at Cedric Tillman, does it always look pretty? No, like I just went back through and actually watched a lot of his targets again today, just preparing for this podcast. It looks a little bit awkward at times. There'll be some double catches thrown in there every once in a while. But I think when you look at his ball tracking ability over the shoulder, his ability to adjust the ball mid-flight, and at the end of the day, like the proof is in the pudding. The ball is almost never on the ground with Cedric Tillman. He's got good length. He's tall. He's got the ability to go up and win above the rim. But then also that ability to just be a finisher underneath as well really stands out to me about Cedric Tillman, I think, securely in the early stages of day two in this draft.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think because most of his production came the 2021 season, he had that tightrope ankle surgery as a senior, didn't go to the Senior Bowl. So I think, you know, just not being front and center in recent memory maybe is why he doesn't get as much play. But I mean, he is well liked by scouts because of what you're talking about, those yep. the ball skills to be able to finish. For a day three option, I'm going to go with CJ Johnson from East Carolina.
Nice.
I'm not a huge fan because I think his lack of top end speed is going to be a real issue for him once he gets to the NFL, but he's awesome at the catch point. He plays through contact really well, strong to the football. I think he's going to be drafted as more of a big slot, a guy that can work the middle, win those contested throws because the ball skills are so good.
Yeah, I don't have my notes in front of me, but I feel like he had a pretty good workout in Indianapolis at the combine, if memory serves, in terms of like positional workout. I feel like I remember coming away with that pretty impressed with CJ Johnson. Let's go to the next category here. Most pure vertical threat. Who's just got the best combination of top end speed along with those ball tracking skills to be a threat to attack down the field? I'll let you kick things off with a guy on day one or day two.
Yeah, pretty easy here. Jalin Hyatt, the other Tennessee receiver, not a complete receiver, but the areas of his game that you really like, he's above average in those two areas, the vertical speed and the tracking skills. So, and that's exactly what we're talking about with this category. He's got those galloping strides. He can get on top of corners, that vertical separation. He has a go and get gear. So, you know, winning deep or being able to, you know, understand trajectory and, you know, beating coverage that way. So nobody in the FBS had more catches of at least 40 yards, of at least 50 yards, or at least 60 yards last year than Jalin Hyatt. So this is a guy that is, you talk about proof is in the pudding. I mean, just watch that Tennessee offense and watch him go play. So, yeah, is he well-rounded? No, but if you want a vertical guy who can track the ball and has got good ball skills down the field, Jalin Hyatt's going to be high on your list.
Yeah, I was interested to see if you were going to go with him or your boy Tyler Scott from Cincinnati. For me, I'm going to go down to the Ivy Leagues. I'm going to go Princeton wide receiver Andre Yoshivas, who I think actually has a pretty decent chance at the back end of day two here, Dane. You're talking a 6'3", 205. So this is a big boy at wide receiver who ran in the low 4.4s, which is a pretty good number. He jumped out of the gym. He had a 1.5 flat 10-yard split, which again, at 205 pounds, like that is unique movement skills for a guy that big. So I think when you look at Yoshivas, you look at the testing and you expected him to test well. He's a big time track athlete in college and in high school. So you expect that, an Olympic level quality athlete, right? But when you watch him on film, that track speed shows up on the football field. He's got the ability to track the deep ball. Just like what you were saying with Hyatt, is he a finished product yet, especially in the quick game? No, he's got to get a little bit better from that standpoint. But I think when you look at Andre Yoshivas working down the field, you know, I think that there are shades of Christian Watson, who the Packers traded up for to take in the second round last year. I think there are shades of like a Mac Hollins type, who was an early fourth round pick by the Philadelphia Eagles a few years back and is still in the league and being a productive player. I think when you look at Yoshivas, there are a lot of similar traits to those two guys who are, you know, second and fourth round picks. And I think that's kind of where we're looking at with him at the end of the day, is he's going to be somewhere in that range. I do think there's a decent chance coming from the Ivy League that he ends up on the early stages of day three, as opposed to the latter stages of day two.
I think you're right. I think the physicality of NFL corners is going to be a big transition for him. Even though he has a bigger body, I think that's just matching up against more physical guys. That's going to be an issue early on for him. But when you have a guy with that size, that skill set, and a guy that can win down the field, he can win after the catch. That's somewhere in the third, fourth round range, probably where he's going to end up.
All right, let's go now to guys that are also game breakers, but do it with the ball in their hands. The best yak weapon. Who's the best after the catch in this class? And if I'm looking day one, day two, a couple options here. I thought about going maybe Quentin Johnson from TCU, but I'm ultimately going to go with Zay Flowers from Boston College, where you look at what he's done over the course of his career, just under 7 yards after the catch per reception. You look even back to 2021, 7.5 yards after catch per reception. This is a guy that's got the ability to, and he does it in a lot of different ways. It's not just like screen game. You watch him on shallow crosses. You watch him in the intermediate area. He hits the catch point running, and he's got the ability to make that first man miss. And he does it through a lot of different ways. I think he plays a little bit bigger than his size. I mean, he's 5'9", 182, plays a little bit bigger than that with the ball in his hands. But I think when you look at his game-breaking ability, he's a good athlete. He's quick. He's sudden. He's got some top-end speed to run away in space. He can find creases. I think that he's got some return ability that does show up on offense. And so they like to get him the ball on, the jet motions, the reverses, the screens, and do a lot of different things there because of what he can do after the catch. So for me, I'm going to go Zay Flowers as the best yak weapon in the early stages of the draft.
For a day three option, I'm going to go with DeMario Douglas from Liberty.
Great pick.
Who, he was the Liberty offense last year. I think he had like 76 catches, something like that. The next highest on the team was like 22. He was the offense, dynamic catch and go out of the slot. And what I really like about him is he prioritizes the catch, the catch and run. He's urgent, but he makes sure he catches the ball first and then he creates. The testing numbers match up. He was a 4.44 guy at the combine. At his pro day, ran a 7.053 cone, which is a solid number. He was over 11 feet in the broad. The controlled urgency that he plays with out of the slot, and also as a return man, I think that's what's going to make him a valuable day three pick.
Yeah, he's a that's, and honestly, like Ben made the comment, or they made the comparison between those two guys, Zay Flowers and DeMario Douglas, on the podcast last week. So interesting that we both came up with those guys for this category. Let's go to the next one here. Best ISO receiver. Which player do you feel best about being able to line up outside the numbers as a prototypical traditional X receiver, isolated to the boundary, and just asking to win as both a route runner and as a ball winner? Dane, you've got a pick here for day one or day two.
There aren't many true X receivers in these, especially in these early rounds. Cedric Tillman, you could make the case, could maybe be that guy. I'm going to go Quentin Johnston from TCU. I have my concerns with some raw parts of his game, but he's a well-built athlete. He wins with size, with length, with speed, athleticism, body control. He tracks the ball well, more drops than you want to see, but because of his tracking, because of his athleticism and size, he can be a ball winner. The testing wasn't as impressive as I think many expected, but he's still a really good athlete for that size, and he can win one-on-one. You put him on the outside.
I think when you look at Johnson, the ceiling is really, really high. And I think you could say the same to a certain extent. It's obviously a lower ceiling, but I think when you look at Dontavian Wicks from Virginia, if you're just grading the flashes with him, especially over the last 2 years, not even just from this year, but if you look at the last 2 years with Dontavian Wicks, you could see a starting X receiver in the NFL. I mean, I think his release package coming off the ball, he faced a ton of press coverage over the course of his career at UVA. He's got the ability to win early. He's got some suddenness to him early on in the down. Now, that top end speed kind of withers, and that did show up at the 40-yard dash at the combine, but he's a long strider who can get on top. He's got some wiggle and shake to create his own separation. To me, my biggest hangup with Wicks has just been the drops. I mean, he's just so inconsistent at the catch point. And that's going to be something that needs to get corrected moving forward to the NFL. But again, if you're grading the flashes, you could look at Dontavian Wicks and say, okay, like I think this guy could be an X receiver in the league. But again, it's what you mentioned there. There's just kind of a lack of depth there at that specific role in this receiving class. And Wicks, I think, is maybe the best of the bunch, but I could have gone a number of different ways. Maybe that's Justin Shorter from Florida. The Jefferson kid from Louisiana. There are a couple other options I could have gone with, but ultimately ended up with Wicks.
Well, he's so interesting because he's 6'2", 205. Ran in the 4.6s at the combine. At his pro day, it wasn't much better. It was 4.57, 4.59. But he also had a 6.913 cone at his pro day, which is really, really good. And this is a guy that has huge hands, humongous wingspan, over 80-inch wingspan. So, I mean, there's a lot to like about the size and athleticism. Maybe not the top-end speed. The drops, like you said, are an issue. But there are plenty of areas of his game that you really appreciate.
Let's go to some player comps here. Everyone loves a player comparison. Who's one that stands out to you?
My guy, Tyler Scott with Tyler Lockett. I think that, a guy that is, it's funny. This is a running back in high school. I asked him how many catches he had in high school. He said maybe 10. He was a running back in an option offense. So he goes to Cincinnati and he turns himself into a receiver. You see nuance to his game. He can get open at every level of the field. But he also has these big plays in him. All 14 of his touchdowns in college were over 20 plus yards. He averaged 44.6 yards per touchdown grab. That's crazy. So the ball skills are promising. He's undersized like Tyler Lockett, which I think that limits the catch radius. But, he plays with that short area suddenness. He's got the deep speed. He's going to give you immediate value as a gunner. But I think this guy really has long-term potential to be a Tyler Lockett type of weapon.
Yeah, I think the first time you said it to me, that when the light bulb went off, I was like, yeah, that's a really, really good one. And it's funny with player comps, there's a couple of different ways you can go about it, right? There's the stylistic ones, right, where it's like, okay, maybe the body type isn't quite there, but this guy can be used the same way, or he played the same role in college, or I see him being used the same way in the NFL. Or you go straight, like, physical composition, like the body type and testing, and go, spider graph and do it that way. It's rare that you get both that match up really, really well. And I feel like mine does match up really well. And I remember as soon as this one hit me, I texted you right away. Rashee Rice from SMU, the outstanding senior receiver, over 230 catches with his career with the Mustangs. Him and Chris Godwin are near body doubles. The body type is very, very similar. I actually have to look in from a testing standpoint and see how much they matched up. But either way, this hit me back in the fall when I was body typing Rashee Rice. Very, very similar in terms of the way they're built. And then when I look at the usage and I read the scouting reports, these guys are twins, man. The way that they were used in college, both inside, outside guys, really, really aggressive, violent blockers who win with in all areas that way, fights through contact, able to win at the catch point, outstanding grabs over the course of their career. Godwin made some ridiculous catches during his time at Penn State, and the same thing with Rashee Rice. Some things to clean up, but a lot to like here with Rashee Rice. And I think when you're looking at purely off tape, like a day two talent all day. And that's where Godwin ended up going and has turned into a really nice receiver, obviously, with the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Yeah, no, I think that was a great call on the comp with him. And I've been a big fan of Rice going back to the summer, and I do really like the talent. So I like that comp as well. Obviously, Chris Godwin's been a very good NFL receiver, and we'll see if Rice can do the same thing.
Dane, who's the guy you're surprised is not getting more love at the receiver position?
I'm going to go Jaden Reed, Michigan State. I think that a lot of people saw the production drop off this past year and they kind of lost interest. But, I mean, the Senior Bowl is a reminder of how good this guy is. Speed, he's got ball skills. He plays big for an average size wideout. So you go back to the 2021 tape when Michigan State had a competent offense, and then you watch the Senior Bowl. There's no way Reed should escape the top 100 picks of the draft, in my opinion. If he's still available on day three, something's up.
Yeah, that's it. For me, I'm going to go with a guy that's kind of a similar body composition. That's Marvin Mims from Oklahoma. We're talking about a 3-year starter for the Sooners. Jumped right in and it was a big part of that Lincoln Riley offense these last 2 years. And then this past season with a new offense was really productive. He's played both inside and outside there during his time in Norman. The ball tracking is outstanding. And then again, with a lot of these guys in this category over the course of all positions, you just go back to like watching, like whether it's the Senior Bowl or like the combine workout, where you see these guys go rep after rep after rep against their peers. And you just see like this guy is just so polished in everything he does. Everything that I've heard about off the field is aces. Marvin Mims, this kid just deserves a little bit more love, I feel like, than he's getting. I really, really enjoy studying him.
Yeah, the more you watch him and study him and look at the testing data, you do more digging, it's just you find out reasons why you shouldn't really like him, And so there are question marks. He's not a perfect prospect by any means, but there are a lot of promising things about his eval that enough to get you excited about what he could be at the pro level.
All right, so four names we did not hit on. I want you to hit on one. Jordan Addison, obviously, from USC. We didn't hit on it in any category. Xavier Hutchinson from Iowa State. A.T. Perry from Wake Forest. Jonathan Mingo from Ole Miss.
I got to go with Addison, who's my top-ranked receiver, has been throughout the entire process. And, you know, is he a slot only? Can he work outside? There's, you know, I think some people have question marks there. I just know he's a really good player. I mean, some of these routes that he's running, he gives you flashbacks of Stephon Diggs with the way he moves out there. You wish you were bigger, 173 pounds, I believe, at the combine. Not ideal, but he can win before and after the catch. And I think if you're looking, I don't think there's any receiver in this draft that belongs in the top half of round one. But if you're looking for a receiver in the back half of round one, I think he should be at the top of your list.
I agree with everything you said there on Addison. For me, one guy, if I didn't have the Rashee Rice player comp, the other one that just kind of hits me over the head while watching this player go, Xavier Hutchinson from Iowa State. He is my Amon-Ra St. Brown in this class. And I feel like that's become such a chic comp because everyone's like, all right, who's the early day three receiver who could come out and become a number one guy, quote unquote. But I think when you look at Xavier Hutchinson, the way that he goes about his business, he does a lot of dirty work, good route runner, can create separation, automatic at the catch point, competitive after the catch. He's a joy to watch, and they do all kinds of things to get him the football. I really enjoy Xavier Hutchinson. Let's go to the next one here. Tight ends. Last 10 years, the average number of tight ends drafted every spring, 14.6. We had 19 last year, well above that mark. It was below that the last two, but Dane, as we sit here now, this feels easy. Over under 14.6 tight ends drafted this year.
I don't know if I've said under yet, which is, you know, the math isn't right, but I'm not going to start now. I'm going with the over. This is a really good tight end class, early and late. So I'll be pretty surprised if we don't hit at least 15 tight ends this year.
Yeah, my guess is we'll probably hit the over. I think 15 is a fair number to assume. We'll probably hit the over on that one. The best potential to be a do-it-all, every down, line up anywhere tight end. And that's what you're chasing, right? That's what every team is looking for. Who can play with their hand in the dirt in line, be moved around as a pass catcher, doesn't give away the offensive intention, right? If it's run, pass, or whatever you want to do schematically. Dane, I think you're going to like my answer here for my day one or day two option, because I'm going to go with South Dakota State's Tucker Kraft. You know, and this is a guy that you've been pounding the table for since the summer, just getting a chance to study him. I think you see a guy that can impact the game in a lot of different ways. And I think, you know, it's going to be easy to compare him to Dallas Goedert, right? And the impact that Dallas has had here in Philadelphia. I think that Dallas just had a little bit more juice athletically, you know, what he could do with the ball in his hand, how he could stretch the seam. He just had a little bit more oomph there. And I think that's what kind of separates these guys in terms of being from a tier separator. But when I look at the other tight ends in this class, I feel as good or better about all the areas of his game with Tucker Kraft as opposed to the other guys, where I think there are questions about different areas of their game. With Kraft, I'm like, yeah, like this guy can do everything. I don't know that he's going to be like elite in any area, but he could do everything really, really well.
Well, it's funny because I'm going to talk about him later for my favorite comp, and listening to you talk about him, I was like, okay, yep. I feel really good about this comp because everything you're saying matches up. So I'll hold off on that for mine for a day three. Look, I think this guy's going day two, but I don't know how everyone thinks about him, but I feel like more people think of him as a day three guy. Luke Schoonmaker from Michigan. You know, this is a player who, I just hope he stays healthy. He's banged up this past year with the shoulder. It's like he just couldn't get going. It hurt him in the playoffs, the semifinals. And then he couldn't get through his pro day workout. He had some type of leg injury. So, but this is a guy who he's a wide tight end. He was actually originally a left-handed quarterback in high school, made the transition, catches the ball well, efficient in his routes. I just think, you know, he showed improvements each year. He got better and better. And so you look at the size, the speed, the strength. He could be a positional blocker, possession receiver, a steady number two with potential to be a number one in the right system, right offense.
Yeah, he's a guy I know. There's a lot of people that are big fans of his game. So I'm glad you brought him to the table there. But let's go now to more, you know, guys that are more defined roles here. Best flex pass catcher. Who's got the best shot at really sticking as an impact player from the slot or out wide, purely as a pass catching option at the position early on the draft, first couple rounds? Who do you like?
Got to go with Dalton Kincaid. FCS transfer from San Diego, came over, and man, he's just such a good receiver. He might be the best receiver in the draft. best pass catcher in the draft, including right. receivers, including tight ends, including, you know, in both positions, the best pure pass catcher because of his ability to isolate the football, come down with it, and then do something after the catch. So, you know, there's questions about his play strength and, you know, consistency as a blocker. I have zero questions about his ability as a pass catcher. He's got burst, he's got body control, he's got ball skills. He is going to be a playmaking move tight end in the slot, a natural ball winner, confidence in his hands, and he could do a lot of damage after the catch as well. So if I'm looking for a playmaker in the slot, Dalton Kincaid's at the top of the list.
For me, I'm going to go Josh Wiley from Cincinnati. You know, 6'6", 250 pounds. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Austin Hooper coming out of Stanford. And Hooper has turned into a nice, solid player. And I think Wiley has that in his future. I think this is a guy with really smooth, natural athleticism, really fluid in and out of cuts, not a lot of wasted movement. He's got speed down the seam to be a threat. Really soft hands. He'll pull in one-handed grabs on the move, transitions quickly to a runner after the catch. And I feel like Yak is kind of like one of those separating factors with tight ends that really say, like, okay, like, could this guy be a reliable pass catcher versus, yeah, this guy's got a little something extra. I think Wiley has a little something extra. There are some things he's got to straighten out in his game from a, especially from like a, in the run game, that'll keep him from being an every down player at the end of the day. But I think when you look at Wiley and his ability to be moved around the formation as a matchup guy, I mean, he's got all of those tools to be that kind of player.
I mean, tools, I think that's the right way to sum him up, because I really thought I would like him more based off of watching him, because he has a lot of the tools. It's just, he was so inconsistent as a receiver, and I wanted more out of him. And maybe an NFL team will be able to unlock that. And that's why we're talking about him as a day three pick. Yeah. But he has the tools. And so if he goes to the right spot, look out, it could end up clicking for him.
All right, let's go to the best inline player. Who's the best when attached to the formation, used as both a blocker or just releasing off the line of scrimmage in traffic and working the middle of the field? This one was a slam dunk here for me. Well, actually, I take that back, because I could have gone two ways here. I could have gone Michael Mayer from Notre Dame or with Darnell Washington from Georgia. I ended up going with the latter. I went with Washington. You know, he's got outstanding size, obviously. And everyone will say the first thing, well, it's one of the first things everybody says about Darnell Washington is like an extra tackle out there. 6'6", 265 pounds, outstanding. Almost an 84-inch wingspan, 34.5-inch arms. This guy is a finisher as a blocker. He's really, really strong as a blocker when it comes, as far as, you know, college tight ends are concerned, as dominant as they come. So I think when you look at Washington, what he did in the SEC, really impressive. Now, he's got some things he's got to clean up as a route runner. You know, I think he could be a little bit awkward at times at the catch point, but the flashes in the pass game are outstanding. We know that they've got other options in that position room with the Georgia Bulldogs. You know, so it's not like he was going to be the number one tight end. But I think when you look at Darnell Washington, yeah, this guy should be an inline presence pretty early in his NFL career.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Over under.
Ooh.
100 catches and over his first 3 years in the league.
Oh, I obviously a lot of that will have to do with landing spot, right? Uh-huh. My guess is with knowing that, I'm going to have to say the under. I would have to say the under. What about you?
Yeah, no, that's tough, because I think, especially that first year, you expect a transition period. Tight ends always transition a little bit slower than other positions. Yep. So that makes it a little tough. I think I'd agree with you. I think I'd probably take the slight under. I'd bet more in the 80 to 100 range, more so than the 100 to 120 range.
Yeah. All right. Well, who do you got here for day three in line?
So I'm going with Payne Durham, Purdue tight end, who he's a wide tight end for the Boilermakers. He worked in the slot as well, but, you know, did a lot of dirty work with his hand on the ground. He's the type of guy that can get up. He's a little rigid, a little upright, but once he gets going, he can go do some damage over the middle of the field. He's physical, he's strong at the point of attack. I think the technique needs work as a blocker, but he can become a dependable blocker because he has the traits to do it. So this is a guy that can do all the dirty work at the position, work in line. I can be a solid number two for an NFL offense.
He's been a touchdown maker throughout the course of his career for the Boilermakers. He's been really, really, I mean, yeah, he had 8 touchdowns this year, 6 last year. He had 4 as a freshman back in 2019, 3 in the COVID-shortened offseason in 2020, or COVID-shortened year in 2020. So this is a guy that's been really, really good, especially down in the red zone. Let's go now to the next category here. Most natural hands and ball skills. Who's the best finisher at the catch point here in this tight end group?
This is where Michael Mayer, we get to talk about him. Yeah. I think he's arguably the best contested catch receiver, tight end, that I have watched the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. Very, very good with no matter the situation, no matter what action is required to finish the catch, he does a really nice job of doing that. And, you know, you see the full tight end route tree on his tape. You know, he's and he's a guy that he obviously, the lack of receiver talent was a big part of that. But you can just understand that those Notre Dame quarterbacks last year than this year, they knew if they were throwing in the direction of number 87, they had a good chance it was going to end up as a completion. And so I think that'll continue in the NFL no matter where he goes. He'll be looked at as that secure pass catcher, maybe not a game breaker, maybe not someone that's going to, you know, have a ton of yak, but a guy that you know you can rely on when you target him.
And that's the thing, is that when you look at Michael Mayer, there's not like one like dominant physical trait where like, oh, like, you know, he's got outstanding size, he's got great speed or athleticism, he's not a powerful blocker in line. Like he gets by, he'll lose slow, but he's not like a dominant presence as a blocker. But his hands, like, that's his superpower. That's where he really stands out. He's just so good at the catch point. So I agree with you there. For me, day three, I want to go Davis Allen from Clemson, you know, just under 6'6", 245 pounds. He'll spend a good amount of time, not just in line, but also flexed out wide. Like he was asked to be an ex-ISO receiver and was asked to separate one-on-one. They had a lot of plays dialed up for him. They had a lot of faith in him as a pass catcher there at Clemson. So I think when you look at his ability as a receiver, very reliable at the catch point, rarely lets the ball hit the ground. To me, like this was a guy, when, you know, I looked at day three of this draft, really, really stood out. From a hand standpoint, looking back at my notes and then going back, just checking the PFF numbers, 3.3 drop percentage, 3.3% drop percentage over the course of his career. Really, really impressive number. One of the best numbers in this class. And so, actually the only guy that I see as lower, Dalton Kincaid at 1.6. That's absurd. Yeah. 1.6 Dalton Kincaid. I think when you look at Davis Allen, you really, really like the hands and the ball skills, his ability to finish the catch point.
He never had more than one drop in any of his seasons at Clemson. Mm. So yeah, this is a guy that ran a little slower than I thought. He's a guy that will win and win no matter the situation. So no, I think it's a great pick.
Well, one guy who did not run slower than we thought was a guy that I wanted to hit on for my player comp here, as we're going to talk through player comparisons. I want to go through Old Dominion's Zach Kuntz, who was on the freak list coming into the year. I believe he was number 11 on that freak. Yeah, he was number 11 on the freak list, which for a guy that coming from the group of five at Old Dominion, impressive, and kind of put your ears up. 6'7", 255 pounds. He's got great wingspan. All those numbers that Bruce Feldman had back in the summer, he either surpassed them or matched them over the course of his athletic testing session at the combine. 4.55 in the 40, under 6'9 in the three cone, 128 inches in the broad, 40 inches in the vert. Just a ridiculous athlete. And when I watch him on film, a guy that I think he's really comparable to is Mike Gesicki, who Mike Gesicki, when he was coming out of Penn State, viewed as an A-plus athlete, all those movement skills. Ironically enough, Kuntz actually started his career at Penn State, was there right after Gesicki left. And I think when you look at Kuntz, he's got to get better at the run game. No question about it. He's used as a lead blocker there. At times, he'll be asked to like block defensive ends one-on-one. He's just got to get a lot better on the backside of a lot of these plays. Now, I think when you look at him purely as an athlete, a lot to like there. I think he's probably I think Mike Gesicki, a decent comp there for Zach Kuntz. I don't know if you like that one, but let's hear your comp as well.
No, I do like that one. I think that, and obviously the Gesicki NFL career hasn't gone maybe like we thought it might, you know, or based off of, or, you know, the promising part of it.
Yep.
As it hasn't come to fruition, but we'll see if that changes in New England. For mine, I went with Tucker Kraft and compared him to Foster Moreau, who is just an all-around dependable guy. And obviously, yeah. Foster's dealing with his own stuff right now off the field, but on the field, as a blocker, as a receiver, I might not have one true superhero trait, but he does everything very well as a receiver, as a blocker, and he's a quality NFL player, and I think that's what Tucker Kraft's going to end up being.
And at the end of the day, like a lot of what the guy is going to be is going to come down to opportunity. And I think when you look at Foster Moreau, like whenever he's been asked to be a three down tight end, he's been a serviceable starter. He has been just fine there with the Raiders. And so we'll see. Hopefully he's able to get back on the field sooner rather than later. Dane, two guys we did not mention. I'll let you pick one. Luke Musgrave, potential first round pick in this draft or out of Oregon State, and then Sam Laporta out of Iowa.
Well, I'll talk about Luke Musgrave, who, you know, I think has a chance to be a first round pick, no doubt. He's 6'6", 255 pounds, really good athlete. He can play on special teams. He can block. He can run the seam. You can just do so many things with him. He's pretty far away from his ceiling about, you know, just how good of a football player that he could be. And so I think he's going to continue to build up that football resume. It's not, I don't think he's going to be a quick starter. And, you know, like we talked about earlier with tight ends, just needing some time to transition, but he's a high level athlete. I really like his route running. I like his blocking talent. I think he's going to end up being a productive starting combo tight end in this league. So, you know, we've never seen an Oregon State tight end drafted in the top 100 picks, and that's about to change.
Yeah, for me, I'm going to go to Laporta. You know, 6'3", 245, so a little bit undersized, a little bit of a squatty frame, but this is a guy who tested really well coming out of Iowa, and obviously they've got a long tradition of putting tight ends into the NFL. This guy is a finalist for the Mackey Award as the top tight end in college football. I do think when you look at Laporta, it's kind of like the conversation with Michael Mayer, where there's not like an A-plus physical trait there. He tested better across the board, but I think when you watch him on film, like there was nothing about Laporta that really stood out. I was like, oh yeah, like this is the physical trait that going to really take this guy to the next level. But again, you're just kind of checking a lot of the boxes there. He's solid in line. He's not a dominant presence as a blocker, but he's solid. He's got athleticism to create his own separation, easy releases off the line, very little wasted movement, pretty good at the catch point. Not great. Some focus drops mixed in there, but pretty good yards after catch option. Like, again, you're just kind of like checking the boxes with Sam Laporta. And I do think he's got a good chance to be a really solid number two. Honestly, like a Foster Moreau level of player. I don't think that's out of the question with Sam Laporta either.
No. Laporta is a good player. I mean, I don't think he's who was our Colorado State tight end last year? First tight end drafted, right? I can't. Yeah, I'm blanking.
But it was Trey McBride.
Yes, thank you. I mean, is Trey McBride that much of a better tight end than Sam Laporta? I don't think so. Yep. I think they're in the same. They're in the kind of the same bucket in terms of, you know, the level of prospect. He's not George Kittle. I'm not making that comparison, but the coaches at Iowa say that's how he's wired, you know, more so than Noah Fant and Hawkinson and these other Iowa tight ends we've seen recently. So that's something that I know a lot of NFL teams will have in mind when they, you know, have him on the draft board.
Well, Dane, we got through it. A lot of players, obviously, to cover, and a bunch of meat left on the bone, especially a wide receiver, right? I feel like we hit on the main players at tight end, but a wide receiver, a bunch of names we could have hit on. Maybe we'll hit on some more later this week with Ben Fennell. Dane, thanks so much for joining us here. I know we are about a week away, depending on when people are listening to this, from the release of The Beast. Everybody will be keeping an eye out for that. I know I will. We'll talk to you next week here on the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, so great stuff there from Dane Brugler. Let's now wrap this show up with our draft mailbag, where we go to our Apple Podcast page to answer a question. We got a 5-star review and a question from Dr. Johnny O. And before I get into the question, a quick reminder, make sure you head on over to our Apple Podcast page. We're about 3.5 weeks away from the NFL draft as we're recording this. So if you want to get your question answered, get over there, leave it in the comment box. Now's your time, because we're going to do an episode here in a week or two that's going to really just kind of empty the mailbag. And I'm thinking I'll do an episode with maybe with Ben and Greg and just get everybody together, and we'll just answer a boatload of these questions. So if you want to make sure your question is answered, now's the time. Head over there, leave that question in the comment box, and we'll answer it here in an upcoming episode. Now, that said, let's get to Johnny O's question. He said, great content week after week, outstanding podcast. Who are a couple of your favorite players when evaluated on both talent and character? So, Johnny O, let me preface it by this. Obviously, I don't get character stuff on everybody. It's in the draft, right? You know, because I'm only one person. So, everything I get is you talk with people, you read stuff, you watch interviews around these guys at the Senior Bowl or the Combine. And I wasn't at the Senior Bowl this year, right? So, kind of limited exposures, and it's not all completely trustworthy. All that stuff, right? So, the off-field stuff is always one of the trickiest things. But I will try and answer your question to the best of my ability. I think if you go just kind of off the top of my head, kind of going position by position at quarterback. Everything that I've heard about Bryce Young is just aces, you know. And I know there've been reports out there in terms of everything he's been given off the field by that Alabama, that system, that coaching staff, in terms of like pre-snap authority, like setting protections, all the audibles, everything in a pro style offense, the way that he handles his business. I think that is very, very impressive for a guy who, again, a true junior, got into the offense as a true sophomore, with what he did last year. Just really, really impressive. So Bryce Young stands out. Bijan Robinson, everything you hear about him is just aces off the field, a running back from Texas. One player I talked about earlier, Marvin Mims, the wide receiver from Oklahoma. I've heard nothing but good things about Marvin Mims, you know, coming from that Sooner program. And then second on offense here, Cody Mock, from North Dakota State. Just, I believe one person I talked to is offensive lineman, right? So a guy that he's obviously on the field presents a lot, but off the field, you like the player you're bringing into your locker room as well. Defensively, a handful of guys that stood out, obviously, Nolan Smith comes to mind right off the bat. Has been nothing but excellent off the field during his time at Georgia, especially these last couple of years. He's an exemplary player off the field, everything you want from a leadership standpoint, from a locker room character standpoint. So Nolan Smith from Georgia, Trenton Simpson, the linebacker from Clemson, have heard nothing but great things about Trenton Simpson, and what he could be. And that, honestly, what I love about that is that, I think that there's certainly going to be a little bit of a developmental curve there in terms of his role and what he's going to be moving forward. He's kind of like a hybrid halfway linebacker safety over the course of his career, made a move in a new defensive scheme to more of a stacked role this year. And it was mixed results, right? It was a guy adjusting to a new position, but a position he's probably gonna have to play in the NFL. The fact that he's got that great character makes you think, okay, I feel good about him hitting that ceiling. So Trenton Simpson, and then two safeties, J.L. Skinner and Jarvarius Ward. J.L. Skinner comes from Boise State, Jarvarius Ward from Houston. Both these guys are kind of tall, long, rangy safeties. Skinner, a pure free safety. Ward, he's also got a free safety skill set, but also played corner early in his career. So he's got that skill set to lean on as well. Both those guys are really rangy athletes. And from everything I've heard, also bring a lot to the field from a character standpoint. So Dr. Johnny O, appreciate the question. Appreciate the 5-star review. Thanks for that. And we will, again, answer any of your questions. If you go and leave it there in our Apple Podcast page, we'll get to it here in an upcoming episode. That said, that'll do it. We'll be back later this week. We've got Ben Fennell. We've got Greg Cosell. We'll be breaking down more right here on the Journey of the Draft podcast.